Welcome to Imperfect Momming. Our children are constantly looking to us for examples. The term role model doesn't quite cut it here. We are shaping their worldview with every move we make. You see, it's not in the lectures we give or moments where we are actively attempting to teach them. It's in the micro movements we make, the unconscious ways in which we navigate life. We are constantly teaching our children how to show up for themselves, their friends, their future partners, and even their future children. So what can we do to ensure we are raising thoughtful, compassionate, self-aware human beings? We have to become them ourselves. No one is perfect, but we can still all be better, and it starts with self-healing. Let's get to it.
Welcome back to Imperfect Momming, and we have a very special guest today, Christine Horstman. Welcome to Imperfect Momming.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
So I am a professional coach. I do career and life coaching. And when I'm not coaching, I'm a professional development instructor, so corporate training.
Okay.
So most of what I focus on is helping people, you know, develop their professional life, especially in a way that works for their personal life. And then the life coaching usually kind of backs out of the career stuff, because someone comes, you know, they need a job. And then it's like, but what I really want and the things that aren't working are, and then it sometimes turns into the more long-term life coaching. And then on the corporate training, I do everything to do with communication and soft skills.
Something that needs to be taught to everybody is communication.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
And I'm not excluding myself. Proper, clear, direct
yes.
communication.
Yep. And I train on this stuff all the time, and I still catch myself so much. But so much of what we grew up with and what was modeled isn't assertive communication, right? And so there's a lot of unlearning to be done.
Do you notice it's more women than men that are indirect communicators or more passive communicators that, or do you see it across the board?
I do think there is that tendency. I do think with personality style, you can still have some men who have a more reserved personality style that might be more indirect or less forthcoming. But I do think we butt into socialization issues and some sexism and how a lot of women were raised. And then in the workplace, we do know that there are those microaggressions that exist, that, you know, a woman who's aggressive, she's a, or I don't know if we can swear on this show, but she's a B word, right? She's
yeah.
difficult. She's demanding. She's too much, right? And that same behavior with a man, you know, would be considered, oh, that's assertive, when it's really also maybe possibly tipping into aggressive, and the woman's really actually just being assertive. So I do think there are some cultural, you know, norms and issues that are being talked about and explored, but I do think women have to be careful of tipping over into that passive, non-assertive communication style.
Yeah. There's a Taylor Swift song that I don't remember the name of. I think it's The Man. But, you know, she's talking about how in her career, if she was a man, she would be labeled this way. But since she's a woman, she's labeled this way.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting, these gender roles that we get squished into.
Yeah. And it goes to show that young women are still dealing with it, right? You know, and there's another song, and I can't think of who it is, but for some reason, something triggered this. And for like the past week, I just keep thinking of the line. It's like, sit still, look pretty, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I do think there's a lot that women and young girls have still absorbed of what's okay and palatable behavior for others.
Yeah, I think a lot of us have heard the children are to be yes. seen and not heard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's what was triggered when you said sit still, look pretty. And I know that that's definitely a female directed mm-hmm. statement, but I know that a lot of children, men and women, have heard, you know, mm-hmm. you're to be seen and not heard. And
yes.
Yeah. And we're all kind of trying to unlearn that.
Yeah. And I'll take that a step further. And this is something I talk about when I train on topics like emotional intelligence. One piece of emotional intelligence is being able to name and recognize our emotions so that we can express them without being in them, right? So I can be calm and regulated and tell you, I feel hurt when you do this. I would prefer if you would do something different, right? Versus you're hurting me, you're right. And so in order to use assertive I language, which is I language is sort of a hallmark of assertive communication, and to regulate and name our emotions and step into those important pieces of emotional intelligence, this is something I talk about even in corporate trainings, because a lot of people don't even have the vocabulary to name all the nuances of their emotions until it turns into sort of those hot emotions of angry, sad, you know, like that top level. Some people may have heard of an emotions wheel, mm-hmm. and that's the kind of idea that this does, because a lot of us were told not just, you know, be seen and not heard. We were told our opinions didn't count, that we don't feel what we feel. You're fine. Stop crying. You're not hurt. That wasn't a big deal. And so some people have actually been told your emotions aren't what you're feeling. Mm. So there really is a lot that most of us as adults have to start to be more cognizant of. And then, as you say, unlearn.
Yeah. My son and I, we talk about emotions, and he'll say, you look angry, or mm-hmm. something, sound angry. Mm-hmm. And I'll say, well, I'm frustrated. And he's like, how is that not angry?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know. It's a level of angry, but it's softer.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, that's right. On the emotion wheel, anger is sort of that baseline emotion, and frustration is one of them. And often frustration is a combination of anger and something else, like anger and disappointment, or anger and feel slighted. It's often a combination emotion, but it's also one that I think, if we have a tendency towards passive communication, mm-hmm. not wanting to upset other people, it feels safer to say, oh, I'm not angry, I'm frustrated. When sometimes we are angry, and it's harder to complain, to really claim that. And then other times it's helping a child, like your son, understand this is a nuance of emotion. Pieces of it seem similar to anger, but what it is also this. Mm. And here's why I feel this way.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that a lot of times when I say I'm frustrated, it's because I don't want to say I'm angry.
Yeah,
because he will internalize that. And so I want to soften it a little bit, because I know that my emotions are mine mm-hmm. and not his responsibility. And he
right.
takes yeah. them on as his responsibility. And so I soften it as, you know, in some ways. And there was one day that I was very triggered by the way that he was not interacting with me the way I wanted him to, because mm-hmm. I basically mm-hmm. I spent a month where I hardly mm-hmm. saw him because I was nauseous 24/7. So aww. I spent most of the day in bed, and then when I started feeling better, I was like, oh, I feel better. And so I, you know, get home and I'm like, hi, and he's like, what a, yeah, what, why are you bothering me, mom? And I just got so triggered in that mm-hmm. moment. And, you know, I told him that, you know, I really felt hurt because I wanted attention from you. I wanted you to, you know, speak nicely to me and be excited to see me and not, you know, rah.
Right, right.
And, but it was like in the midst of my trigger, it was, you hurt my feelings, like in yes. my head. I didn't ever say yes. it out loud, but I was like, you hurt yes. my feelings.
Yeah, good for you. But again, that's sort of how most of us have processed emotions, is that you made me something. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to not slip into that language. You know, again, good for you that it was internal, but you shifted gears in interacting with your son. But that's the harder work. Mm-hmm. That's the harder work, I think.
Yeah. Slowing down our reaction times, I mm-hmm. think it gives us a lot of power. And, you know, the other night our family was going somewhere, my boyfriend and my son and I, and our dog just thinks he's people and yeah. thinks that he comes wherever we go. And we were going
one of those.
And I mean, he is people for the most part. He's part of the family. And he does go where we go most of the time, but this time he was not able to go. And so we all kind of walked out of the door one by one so that he wouldn't get out. Well, he did get out when it was my turn to open the door and leave. And the gate to the front yard wasn't closed. So he just Uh-oh. Ran right out the front yard. And in over to the truck, and I'm calling the dog and he's not listening. Mm-hmm. And that's very frustrating for me that, yeah. you know, the dog does not listen to me, some of the time. And from my perspective, he 100% of the time listens to my boyfriend. And so I was like, can you get the dog back in the house? And my boyfriend was irritated by that. And he said, yeah, sure. It's a lot easier for someone else to do it. I was like, oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay. That's not what it is right now. Like he listens to you. Well, so we were kind of going back and forth where it was like, I was giving up because the dog wasn't listening to him either. And he ended up pulling him by the collar to get him into the house. And his point of view was A and my point of view was B. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm just going to stop because mm-hmm. I'm upset and you're not going to see my point of view and I'm not going to see your point of view. So we just need to let this go. And it was probably silent in the car for 3 to 4 minutes, maybe five. But then, you know, my boyfriend's a master at like misdirecting and he's like, oh, do you see the birds over there? Like, duh, duh, duh. And so, and then we just start going on about our conversation. Like it was just like nothing happened and nobody was angry. Yeah.
Birds are happy. Now we're good. Right.
Birds are happy. Everything's fine. You know, but it was like, I remember thinking, okay, I could say something right now and continue this argument, or I can just let it go because it's over and we can talk about it later if it needs to be discussed later. Right. But, you know, and I think I did kind of bring it up and say, you know, man, I wish we could get the dog to listen. Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, that's why I want to have a dog trainer. Like, that's why I want to get him trained, because he doesn't always listen.
Yeah. And so, you know, practice the pause is one of the things it's like a go-to phrase that I say with my clients all the time. Rarely will steer you wrong. The only danger is if you pause and then you think, oh, we're fine, and we don't do it. And so then like the next time you blow up about the dog, and then the third time, right? And then mm-hmm. things start to escalate. And then you're now fighting about a history that's not about the dog, right? So I think that's the only danger. So the pause can be really good just to let emotions cool, think through to where you can find a little bit more empathy and understanding for the other person's point of view,
yeah.
you know, and then readdress it when we need to. I think that was really smart of you.
And I never had a phrase for it, but I love practice the pause, because that's, what I've learned in this relationship. I was never good at it before. And I learned this relationship because I know that he's more triggered by my emotion than by what I say. So I can say whatever I want, but if there's a activated emotion behind it, there's going to be an activated emotional response from him. And that never works out very well for us.
Right. And that's part of understanding each other and yourselves and finding that
practicing that pause, that the pause is gold because he calms down real quick. And even, and then when he's calm, it calms me too.
Yeah.
I'll get activated by his activation.
Yeah. I mean, it does feel that way, that like emotion is sort of contagious, right? You know, that's one of the reasons, like when we talk about with little kids, like you get down on their level, they're upset. You get down on their level, you slow down your rate of speech, you talk softer, quieter, right? And you start to get them to start to mirror you, right? And shift them to where they can become more regulated. So I do think, you know, on the positive and on the negative, that sort of contagiousness of now we're like in that energy of the emotion versus understanding and problem solving.
Yeah, that's what I'm practicing with my son specifically right now, because he and I feed off of each other's energy and emotion a lot of times. And when my whole life, you were saying all the emotional triggers for me of all the stop crying, be quiet, you're fine, stop being a baby, all of the things. And so my emotions were never okay to have around anyone, mostly my brothers. They were not okay. And when my son has emotions, that gets triggered.
Yeah,
we were kind of talking about my favorite book, Parenting from the Inside Out, before we hit record, and how when you become a parent, some of your childhood wounds become unearthed. You know, when my son gets emotional, I immediately try to make him happy because I want him to stop being unhappy. And then when he's not persuaded by my, you know, brilliant reframing of the situation and he's still mad, then I get mad. And now we're both mad and he's in trouble for having his emotions. And he's called me on that because I'm like, it's totally fine for you to have emotions. It doesn't feel like that, Mom. And I'm like, I know.
Yeah.
I'm working on it. I promise. You know? And so he was gone for a week. He was with his dad for a week and he came back and he had lots of emotions within the first 24 hours of being home. And I was just practicing like, okay, I understand that you getting kicked off of your video game server was really frustrating. I really understand that. And I'm really sorry that you're feeling that way, you know?
And
I don't care about your video game server. I don't care about your video game. But like, stop being a baby.
But that's it. You know, I think it can be hard as a parent where we're trying to process their emotion for them. And that's not really teaching them how to process the emotion, right? And for them to think of, well, how could you reframe this? What's something you could do to get yourself out of this funk? So you feel angry, what are you going to do now?
Yeah.
How could you make yourself feel better?
What was really cool is I learned that my son makes up songs when upset. So I would just, you know, normally I would go into a lecture about how it's not a big deal. It's just a video game. You can get your, you know, your points back, blah, 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 whatever I would say in that situation. And, you know, I just let him be, you know, I communicated, I could empathize with his situation and that really sucks. And on and on, maybe it's going to work out, you know, and, And then we were just quiet. And I'm listening to him and I'm hearing like whispering. And I'm like, what's going on? Are you talking to yourself?
Right.
What are
right.
you doing over there? And he goes, I'm coming up with a song about this situation. And I was like, really?
I love that.
That's the second time he had gone to the hospital. We thought he had appendicitis. And we were in the hospital and he was singing a song about being in the hospital and waiting to find out if he had appendicitis. And I was like, can I record your song? And I recorded him. It was so cute. And then I said, so how long have you been doing this singing song? And he goes, since the dawn of time, Mom. Okay, news to me. Cause I used to sing to him when he was a newborn or early months, he's in the back seat crying and there's nothing I can do because we're driving.
Right. You can't get back there. Yep.
Can't hold him, can't anything, and I can't reason with him, and the crying's driving me crazy, right?
Yeah.
And so I would sing a song, Xander Baby, what's the matter? Xander Baby, what's the matter? Xander Baby, what's the matter? And he would stop. And it was like, and I had two or three songs that I would sing to him. They were just cute, fun songs, right?
Yes.
So it was so funny. And he was not impressed by my story, but he was still upset.
Listen, but you gave him a self-regulation tool, right? You know, what you did soothed him. He's learned to do it for himself. And he might be a little bit more of a verbal processor, right? So the singing and putting it to word helps him process it, and almost saying it out loud, right? I think that's super cool.
That is really cool. So I want to hear about your book. So
yes.
If you're watching the podcast, there's a very cool background of your book. And that was the first thing I saw, obviously, when you jumped on Zoom. So tell us a little bit about your book.
Yeah, so my book baby just had a birthday. It just turned 6 months old. So this was my pandemic project. I had met my publisher years before in networking. So this is my networking plug. You can put my career coach hat on for a minute. Networking is planting seeds. You don't know where it's going to take you. But when you can make genuine connections and try to be supportive of and in service to one another. And she put out a call for, you know, thinking about different topics, and coping was one of them. And so, you know, a lot of my coaching, as I said, it starts more professional and leads with career. But I think what makes me a really great coach is that I've learned a lot about coping. I live with chronic illness. My son is 18 now. And when he was 18 months old, I was diagnosed with thyroid cancer. And that set off a chain of chronic health issues. And so basically, I've had health problems my son's entire life. He hasn't known me differently. And then my son has had his own struggles with some learning differences and, you know, getting that sorted out when he was younger and still supporting him through that. So I thought, you know, I'd really love to explore this idea of coping. And one of the things that was crystallized for me at the beginning of the pandemic with so much job loss, of course, I'm dealing with people changing jobs. And sometimes that's because they lost it and not, you know, of their own desire, but it was so much job loss and the conversations, it just kept hitting me that a loss of health and job loss, there's a similar journey you go through with a shakeup in your identity. Who am I if I'm not this label? Who am I if I'm not the VP of marketing anymore? Who am I if I'm don't have a job and don't provide, you know, be one of the breadwinners for the family? Who am I if I can't parent like I thought I could? Because like your experience, I've been in bed for a month and I can't function. I'm not a good because I'm not this anymore, right? And so that grappling with identity and self-worth, I think is a big one in these two experiences. Other experiences, of course, too. But this is what kind of led the path of writing this book, Deal With It Doll, Coaching Yourself Through Crisis. And I take you through sort of almost like a Wheel of Life exercise for any of you who have done that before. But it's one half is personal and one half is professional. So the common transitions, changes, and bigger crises we may face in life. So from health and self to our relationships and a lot of this stuff that we were talking about already with communication and emotional intelligence and parenting and similar themes of what we were talking about of, you know, separating ourselves from our children, our own growth that's continuing to take place through the lens of parenthood, those bigger questions of what does success look like? Again, self-worth. Is my self-worth coming through my children more than I thought it was? You know, what if they don't graduate and become a lawyer? What does that mean? All my friends' kids are going to Ivy Leagues and I'm on this path with my child. And how does that make me feel? And I'm not, you know, so all these issues of who are we at our core and what's essential to us, which were also big issues that were coming up through the pandemic, right? And then the other half on the professional is education. Those are big questions we go through for ourselves and for our children, of course. Careers, leadership, and wealth or finances. So running through the gamut of who are we, what's important to us, and how are we really going to define our life? And when we can get clear on that, it makes weathering the storms a little bit easier.
Yeah, I think that this is a beautiful description of your book. Like, I want to, I'm ready to buy it.
Awesome. My work is done here.
Right. And end scene. Okay, so when there's a book that I had been recommended in my early 20s, because I'm a pastor's kid, and there's a book called I Have to Be Perfect. And I forgot about it for years. And my dad passed away recently. And so it kind of, I was like, there's a book that I like, I need to find this book. And even without knowing the author or the title, I was able to find the book. So I thought that was interesting. But one of the, what I remember from it, and I'm going to reread it, but what I remember from it is that I grew up kind of thinking that my actions were a reflection on my dad's job. And so that's where this, I have to be perfect phrase and feeling comes from, because if I'm not perfect, it reflects poorly on him. And I was seeking a lot, his approval constantly and without knowing that I had it unconditionally. And, but what I realized recently is that if I felt like I was a reflection on my dad, it's transferred over to my son, that my son is a reflection of me. And so there's been in our history a lot of like, I want to control his behavior and how he is around other people when other people can see him.
Yeah.
Because I don't want other people thinking what a bad mom I am.
Yep.
Judgment. Because he's having a meltdown at the park because he doesn't want to go home. You know? And so you said, when you said that about being, you know, my identity being wrapped up in my kid, like that, that's where my brain went, is like,
yeah,
oh, like my worth was connected to his behavior. And so, and, but because I love him so much, I, when he would act not like me and he's acting like his other parent,
right,
then I would get mad at his other parent for being who he is and passing that DNA down.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's what happened. I mean, this is such a great example, and thank you for sharing that. I don't know if your viewers, you know, or listeners have heard that side of things with you before or not. And certainly, well,
this is very recent, very recent.
Yeah, development, a new realization. Yeah. And I think that's where we get stuck in our relationships, right? We're stuck in judgment we're stuck. If only you were different, everything would be perfect, right? But of course, we can't control other people. We can only, you know, shift ourselves. And then we get locked in power struggles. And then this is where, you know, we end up with sadder situations with our kids where we don't have the closeness that we desire, where they start to develop this, you know, it's the idea of generational, not necessarily trauma in this sense, but generationally passing things down in these very unconscious ways, right? Through our behavior, our thoughts and our actions and our thoughts, if we're not clear on them, they're massively influencing these exchanges and interactions that we're having with people. Versus, like you said, recognizing that unconditional love that's there, and you really probably do love your child unconditionally.
And this is, I'm going to hardcore plug coaching for a second. Because I only had this realization because I was having a conversation with my coach about something that was triggering from some interaction with my son and slash or his dad. And it was, it's like, that conversation now is going to impact the rest of our lives, because now we've just hit a stop. We've hit stop on this thing that could have become a generational trauma. And one of the episodes that I've had recently was about this Native American concept of seven generations, that, that if you want to understand who you are, look seven generations back.
And I just got a chill.
I
remember hearing that before, but I hadn't thought about that in a long time. So I'm glad you reminded me of that, because I think that's super powerful. And tracking your triggers is one of my other favorite things to say and require of my clients, because when we do that reflecting, we uncover these small and really big, powerful pieces, and we also get better over time realizing it in the moment, and then we can practice the pause, and then we've got those assertive communication skills to shift how that conversation in exchange goes down in the future.
Because there's a meme out there just because it's a meme doesn't mean it's not powerful that says that when the wound is ready to heal, the trigger appears. And that just, like, when I heard that or read it for the first time, I was like, ooh, so now I'm looking at my triggers differently. Like, now my triggers aren't just some annoying thing that makes me be emotional.
Yes. Or a bad thing, or failed again thing. Right. But this is an opportunity.
It's an opportunity to heal a wound. And the work that I'm doing now is affecting the next seven generations. And that, like, there's so much power inside that thought process to me. Like, I
absolutely
just love that so much.
Yeah, that reminds me of one that I've always thought about, and it's that saying that peace begins at home. And this is the kind of work that helps that, right? When we heal the old wounds and these, you know, the lack of tools that maybe other generations before us were contending with, and that we've absorbed, and now we have new tools. And that was my hope with the book. And again, that's why, you know, the subtitle's Coaching Yourself Through Crisis. We can do a lot of this work. There's journal prompts in the book. There's affirmations and mantras to kind of help shift some of, once we kind of get aware of some of our programming, to try and shift it. And so my hope is that the book as a whole is a tool, but then within each chapter that there's a series of tools to help people. But working with a coach, when you do have that opportunity, for those who have done it or are considering it, that's like the accelerant, right? You just go a little deeper, a little faster, I think, than when you're doing the work all on your own. Doesn't mean you can't do a lot of it on your own, but sometimes you need that, the added, mirror that the coach can hold up, the way they might challenge you, or, you know, phrase things to get you thinking and unstuck a little bit.
Yeah, the outside perspective. What I read I Have to Be Perfect book this morning was that he basically explained our belief system as being a jukebox. And so a record will come down and then the criminal comes to the record and it starts playing. And he says, a lot of us are walking around with warped records.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yeah.
And so it sounds perfect to us because that record has been playing for all of our life, minus like 3 or 4 years, right?
Yeah. It's the melody we're accustomed to. We're used to it. That's exactly right.
But you being the coach or me being the coach, I hear the warp, right?
Yeah.
And I was having a conversation with somebody yesterday about how she never felt like she belonged. Mm. And I said, and I've known her for as long as any one of us could remember. And I know why she feels that she doesn't belong, but I see her belonging.
Yep.
Right. I've seen her belong. And so I was explaining to her this whole concept of like, when you were 5 years old and you walked into this classroom and you were, you know, 6 feet tall at kindergarten and, you know, the lightest skin color in the classroom, like, you, of course, what's a five-year-old going to think other than I'm an outsider? But now you're 30 plus, you're an adult,
right?
You're a little bit smarter than the five-year-old. Like, let's pick that apart a little bit, because it's not true. And we know it's not true. Like, you're an amazing person and everybody loves you. And you just told me how everybody at work is always singing your praises.
Yeah.
So how could that be true that you don't belong? You know?
Yeah. And where is that old song that keeps playing in her head? In what way is that serving her to stay comfortable maybe on some level? And in what way then is that actually in reality holding her back, right? And that your permission to put on a new record or a new vinyl album, whatever we're calling them now.
Right.
Yeah. Play a new song. Yeah.
And I love that the subtitle of your book is coaching yourself through crisis, crisis.
Okay. Yeah.
It's very small in the background.
It's really hard to read on here.
I have the worst eyesight. I would drop my son off at camp yesterday and we spent the night because I had a little separation anxiety. And we were leaving the camp this morning and my sister was with me and she's like, what's that sign over there say? And I'm like, are you kidding me?
You're asking me?
I'm farther away from it than you are. I don't have glasses on. Anyway, I love that it says coaching yourself through crisis, because I think one word you said it is coping. And I know that there's different connotations to the word coping, but I have a very negative connotation.
Coping.
Because coping is like I'm dealing with it, I'm settling it. It's not something, it's something that has power over me, not something that I have power over.
Interesting.
And so I think that if the subtitle had been coping with
crisis,
I'd be out.
Yeah, that's so interesting.
I'll coach myself.
Yeah, no, and that is the idea, like to be empowered and that, you know, listen, just like we're talking about, a lot of us have learned poor coping skills or what once worked, like you're saying, to that little girl that maybe I once was in out of control situations. Sometimes it's true deep trauma and survival. We can develop coping that we've now outgrown, that now once saved and protect us and no longer supports us or allows us to flourish fully, right? That turns into maybe too self-protective or whatever else, or just unhealthy, right? Just unhealthy. It got us through at one point and now it's flat out unhealthy for us. It's destructive.
I'm seeing that on memes now a lot more than I ever interesting. Had in the past. Yeah, I'm seeing that these things that were once things that were helping you are now holding you back. And
yeah,
I, like it's so true. And it's really, it's really forgiving mm-hmm. when you think of it that way. Because what I would do is like, why am I such a loser for not being able to overcome XYZ when it's like, well, XYZ actually was helping me at one point and it was serving me in my identity and my story and my life. And now I'm trying to grow outside of that and it's no longer serving me. And so we constantly need to check our records, check our beliefs and see where they're warped and see which ones we can toss out and which ones we can bring in.
Right. Or transform a little bit. Sometimes we can still use a piece of that and add with a new tool and a new perspective. And now it works in a healthy way again. But I think that's right. This idea that we are imperfect, each and every one of us, as hard as many of us fall into that trap of, like you're saying, and I think I've felt that before too, of, you know, trying to be perfect so that people will be pleased or liked or whatever that case might be. And the truth is we're all flawed and we're all going to be tested. None of us gets out of this life without some battle wounds. I mean, that's just the reality of it. There is good mixed in with the bad and bad mixed in with the good. Mm-hmm. And so being able to develop those healthy coping skills that give you the resilience to transform through the challenges and the change, to keep going, keep growing, right? And come out the other side, hopefully with a better sense of self and some positives. And that's not to be like Pollyanna or whitewash the difficult things that we go through, but we are going to go through hard stuff.
Yeah.
And so what are we going to do with it?
Yeah.
And sometimes avoiding change, that's a part of what happens in life. We create our own crises, right? By being unable to cope or transition or just getting paralyzed by a lack of clarity or fear or whatever else it is, disappointing our parents, whatever it might be, you know, even just like graduating college. That was a rough time, I remember, for me and for many other people, because it's a time of significant change and transition and a letting go of who I was and stepping out to greater independence and all those realities of that. So I think even our natural times of transition and change can feel like a crisis, you know, for some people.
Absolutely. Is there a piece of advice that you want to give to moms?
Yeah, I think it is to continue to do that self-healing work. You know, there's a lot of self-care, and I definitely feel like there's self-care pieces in my book because that's a big piece of how I cope when I'm not well, right? Is like double down on the self-care. It's like 3 baths, you know, it's whatever it might be. But I think that deeper, truer self-care is doing this healing work like you're talking about. Some of us have even done a lot of the work and we think, oh, I did this. I went to therapy. I had a coach. And then our kids hit certain ages and stages and all of a sudden, oh gosh, there is a trigger again. Maybe I have a little more work to do. Or again, we just see it from another perspective. Mm-hmm. So I think just working on that self-love and the self-care, practicing that emotional intelligence so that we can model and teach the next generation and allow them the tools to know themselves maybe in a better way, deeper way at a younger age than some of us did. So they start life with greater clarity of who they are and what they want out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, we like to think of personal development as, something, a box that we can check. Okay, done.
Yeah, no, right. This doesn't work that way. Communication skills and emotional intelligence. Same thing again. Like I said, I train on these. I still make my mistakes. I still, you know, have my flaws. You and I and every one of us, our children included, we are works in progress. And the one thing though with communication skills is you can go back and say, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Right? I am upset because I took it out on you and I apologize. You know, that takes a little humbling. It takes some vulnerability, right? Mm-hmm. But all of this is, you know, something that we will never stop working on.
Yeah.
Our grandkids are going to come along and we're going to learn something new.
Right.
Or learn it again, right? Revisit it.
And one day you decide to change your life and you spend the rest of your life changing your life. Like it's not going to be a box that we check and we're done and we're good. And we never have to deal with this issue again. And we're never going to yell at our kid again. And you know, that's our expectation of what it's supposed to be like.
Right. And we're achieving some, we're working up some ladder and we're going to get there. And now, all my relationships are so perfect. Every conversation's smooth. Right. I know what I'm feeling all the time, you know? Exactly. The other piece of advice I would give is along those lines is that, and this is what I see as a career coach and a corporate trainer, is that soft skills are the key to success. So all this work that you do, all this support you give your children on this front of personal development is going to be the backbone of their professional development. The people with the better soft skills are the ones who get hired and promoted. Mm-hmm. And so it will have, you know, we worry about their SATs and, they're, you know, not a shining star in an extracurricular or whatever, but what's going to really bring them that success in life is their soft skills.
Yeah. I can't argue. Just from personal experience, I can't argue with that. Is there a book that has been really impactful in your personal development journey?
So it's so funny how we were talking earlier where just sort of things pop up. But when you were speaking about the grappling with perfectionism, and we're talking about passive communication, when I was in my early 20s, my dad gave me a book. I cannot remember who it was written by, but it was called Don't Say Yes When You Want to Say No, which sounds simple, but it can be hard for those of us that are more on that people-pleasing, supportive personality spectrum. And so that was some early seeds that were planted in this kind of work that I'm doing today. And then I think I'm going to get the title wrong, but I would recommend Carol Dweck's book. She focused on growth mindset. She really does a lot on resilience and growth mindset. And I think some of the themes that I talk about are, you know, echoed in her work, but, you know, developing that growth mindset where we are going to fail, but we can get back up and we know we're going to have a challenge, but we handled the challenge before and we can do it again. That resilience is so incredibly important. And so her work has definitely had a huge impact on me, and it's all on mindset and for sure has influenced my mindset.
And my last episode was all about, she recommended that book. And we were talking about my phrase is, if it's not a hell yes, then it's a hell no.
You're right.
But the new trend on TikTok is immediately no. Like that's the new phrase
on
TikTok that I literally learned yesterday. And it's my new favorite thing, but it's basically like, you know, if you have this immediate feeling of that's not right, that feels wrong, then it's immediately no. Like there's no thinking about it. There's no,
right.
No, you know, whatever, it's immediately no.
Yeah. I mean, I think for a lot of people, you know, that taps into the boundary setting stuff that needs to get worked on that can be hard.
Yeah, for sure. And where can our listeners find you?
So Instagram is a great place to connect with me, chris.horstman on Instagram. My website is Paper Doll Communication, and there's a link to the book there. The book is on Amazon. Most big booksellers that you can get it, even your local bookstore could get it for you. But Amazon's an easy place to find it. Deal with it, doll, coaching yourself through crisis.
Yeah, I'm going to order it as soon as we hang up.
Oh, super. I cannot wait to hear what you think. I'll be so excited to hear your feedback.
I'm excited about it. It's, you know, I'm always like, the only reason I ask for book recommendations on the podcast, not the only reason, I know other people are interested in books, but the number one selfish reason is because I want to know what books are impacting people. And like, I want to, you know, if it's a hell yes for me, then I'm going to go buy that book. And so
I love it.
Yeah, yours definitely is. Well, thank you so much for joining me today and pouring into our listeners. And this was a fabulous conversation that I really enjoyed. And I'm excited to read your book.
Thank you. And I had such a great time too. I appreciate the opportunity to come and visit with you.
Absolutely. So we will have another episode of Imperfect Momming for you next week. And until then, keep healing. Bye, guys.
Thank you for tuning in to Imperfect Momming. It's time for us to step up and realize that our power is not in trying to shape our children. Our power lies in shaping ourselves into the people we want our children to model themselves after. Don't just do it for your kids. Do it for yourself. When you become a more self-aware, compassionate, and confident person, you and everyone around you benefit. For more information about me and my work, visit alishalyons.com. That's alishalyons.com. See you next time.